Right, so tonight's class, we're focusing on, this is the last class on my Zen Living book, and there was a chapter in there called Zen FAQs. And I'm going to share a screenshot of the list of questions and invite you all to kind of vote on which ones we should cover or start with. And maybe there's some we should add. So hopefully, yes, I have been enabled as a co-host, so I can share. All right, so Dirt Zendo folks can see that. And I'm just going to move my Zoom screen. You can't see them very well.
Vision problem.
I mean, I'm going to read them out loud.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to read them out loud, so hopefully that will...
They are visible to most of us, I think.
Okay.
And you want us to clap?
Clap. Well, I was figuring I'll read them out loud and give you a minute or two, and then I was thinking if my thought is to make this go as quickly as possible, that like you kind of choose three. And then we'll just kind of do a raised hand. Uh-oh, I have to be able to see all the Zoom people as I do this. Tricky. You're gonna raise your hand if that is something that, like, you want us to prioritize. So I'll just read them first. What if I can't concentrate? That is in meditation. What if seated meditation hurts? What if I keep falling asleep? How can I make myself sit regularly? What about weird experiences while meditating? Could I achieve enlightenment? Me? Did I have an enlightenment experience? What if I don't care about enlightenment? Do I have to go to a monastery or become a monk? How can I deepen my practice? What if my practice has gotten boring? Why has practice seemed to make things worse? What if practice causes relationship problems? Do I have to give up strong emotions? Is it still okay to want things? What about Zen and pleasure? Will Zen change me too much? So, this is gonna be kind of chaotic, but let's see. Probably not going to be able to count. If there's like too many for me to count, I'll just write down like lots. Okay, so if you can only vote for three, and then let's see. So those of you who don't have your camera on, I guess you can do your little raised hand feature. And Ruthann, you can say something, and then I'll know that you're voting. Okay, so first is, what if I can't concentrate?
One raised hands.
One by one.
You only get to vote three times.
One, two, three. All right.
Four.
Okay, four. What if seated meditation hurts? One, two. Tyler, was that her hand raise? Okay. Two. And I do have answers to these in my Zen Living book if you want to check it out. What if I keep falling asleep? One, that's one that I've definitely, that was a big deal for me. So we can talk about that one, Andrew.
All the lazy people raise their
hands. How can I make myself sit regularly? Five, I think that was five, six. And if you if there's questions that like maybe these aren't that interesting questions, so what about weird experiences while meditating? All right, that looks like a one. Can I achieve enlightenment? Me? That's a one. Maybe nobody's that interested in these questions.
Go in to which, the bottom.
Okay. Did I have an enlightenment experience? Of course, this one's kind of private, but two. Okay. What if I don't care about enlightenment? Three in the dirt sendo. One, two, three, four, five or six in the cloud. So that's around an eight, I guess.
That's far from here.
Huh?
Wow, that's a lot of people.
Let's see. Do I have to go to a monastery or become a monk? Doesn't look like anybody's worried about that. That's great. How can I deepen my practice? One, two, three, four in the dirt sendo, five, six, okay, seven. Hey, Ruthanne, have any of these sounded interesting so far?
Well, they're all good. I like the one falling asleep. Fortunately, I think I'm past that now. But the one on pain and just deepen my practice.
Okay. I'll make that.
Thank you.
Sure. And then what if my practice has gotten boring? You can't see. Got a couple of people going. I think I saw two or three people there. Why has practice seemed to make things worse? Okay, I have a one there. What if practice causes relationship problems? One, two, three, four, five. Okay, six, seven. All right, that's some interest there.
That's a big
one. Do I have to give up strong emotions? One, two, three. And then those of you who have your hand, yeah, take your hand down. Is it still okay to want things? See, we're one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. All right, we have a clear winner there. What about, it's kind of related, what about Zen and pleasure? And will Zen change me too much? One, two, three. All right. Let's see then. What if I don't care about enlightenment? Is it still okay to want things? All right, well, we got a place to start there. So I will stop sharing.
Probably ties in. How do the precepts differ from Christianity and the things that they strive towards as well?
Just another question added to the list. How do the precepts differ from...
They're similar. So how is this like, different from Christianity?
Christian morality. Well, I mean, that might be just another topic to save if we don't get to it.
You could do a whole talk on
it. Yeah. All right. So let me... So first of all, let's just start with what if I don't care about enlightenment? Well, I guess it depends on, of course, on what we mean by that. So, what do people mean by that? I mean, if you're figuring, if you're one of the people who was like, I don't really care about it. What is it you think you don't care about? I mean, what is it that you think Zen is selling that you're not particularly interested in buying? Is anybody willing to say? Dave and then Jen.
I mean, I voted for this one for sure, because that's sort of an ongoing struggle for me. And even in the class we're doing now regarding Buddha nature, it's being somebody who's deeply skeptical of just things, adverse to sort of mysticism and religiosity, it takes some effort to maintain faith in the practice and maintain effort. When they say, well, this and that, enlightenment sounds like such a grandiose thing. But for me, practice is very day-to-day kind of nuts and bolts. I don't really have my eye on that. And sometimes I feel like I have a lock on that. Sometimes I don't. And so I don't really have that a clear idea of what enlightenment means to me.
Jen?
I wouldn't say, it's not that I'm not interested in enlightenment. It's that after reading a lot about it, I feel like I have like an intellectual trust that there is a different way to see things, and that when you do, it's amazing and it changes you how you look at things. But when I see that people need to spend their entire lives doing it, you know, and meditating I meditate every day, but I don't meditate every hour of the day, you know, and it seems like from everything I read, it takes your whole lifetime to see it. And then they say, but then you didn't really see it, you know? And so I feel like maybe I can just trust that it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. Do you want to move that chair just a little bit closer to the microphone? And then you can leave. But just for the next person. So that I'm hearing kind of it could seem a little bit like wanting to become some kind of spiritual athlete or something, requiring a lot of specialized training to attain some thing, which might, like, well, it might be great, but, like, is that really how I want to spend my life going after this thing? Mick. Oh, Mick and then Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann is back.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's probably more the, like, phrase enlightenment, because I feel like it has these, like, it just brings a lot of baggage with it of it's like this thing that you get, and because we have to reduce it to a word, but when you reduce it to the word enlightenment, I feel like there's a bunch of stuff that comes with it. And for me, like, it just seems like more of the, like, ooh, if I just had that, then I would be okay. If I just had this one more thing, if my life just changed in this way, then it would be what I want. And I think if we reduce it to the word enlightenment as this thing that you get, then that's just one more thing that we're chasing after. That's it's a dead end.
Shoketsu.
I'm noticing the hand doesn't, I have to change the color of my hand because it hardly shows up in this environment anyway. I remember talking about enlightenment through the years with you, and it seems like enlightenment is like a momentary happening. I mean, it just happens for a moment and then it's gone. Am I incorrect in that? It's not a state of being. You know, you cross the line and there you're enlightened. It's more.
Well, yes and no. Okay. True Zen answer, right?
It is funny. It's like, what the heck are we talking about here?
Well, because if you think about the Buddha spent most of his life enlightened.
Yoli just said, the Buddha spent most of his life enlightened. So, you know, there's definitely Buddhist teachings and texts and lineages, sects, if you will, who speak of enlightenment, in a very concrete way. That it is something that you train for, and then at some point, most places would not say that it's just absolutely like, you know, like a digital thing. It's either all or nothing, but that there's degrees of awakening, and they might recognize that, right? You would, in some kind of system, you might be recognized as having gotten a certain level of attainment. You know, there's definitely, they do that in Theravadan Buddhism. I mean, Zen and other kinds of Mahayana Buddhism kind of just turn all of this on its head. And we'd say, essentially, that there is no enlightened person in the sense that they have achieved something and they never backslide and they never, like, they achieve some kind of altered state. However, there are like degrees of personal understanding, of having personally verified different aspects of what on the Zen Studies podcast lately I've been calling reality with a capital R. So the whole key is that awakening to reality as it really is what is liberating. It is the medicine. So theoretically, that is a possible at any time. So sometimes you'll hear Zen referred to, or Chan, as the sudden awakening school. We say like, hope this doesn't get too complicated here. It also comes from the Mahayana way of looking at things differently. Looking at our true nature is essentially pure and at ease and compassionate and selfless. It's like greed, hate, delusion, conditioning, whatever. We've become self-interested. And when we see through the delusion of that inherently separate self, this other way of being is uncovered. So it's there all along. We just need to see through that delusion. And when we see through that delusion, theoretically it is possible for any one of us to just instantly awaken to how things really are. However, we're very caught up in our ways of thinking. We don't even recognize our ways of thinking as ways of thinking. we have a lot to do to like drop these layers that are covering this nature. But theoretically it is right there. But when it's right there, it's not something that we own or keep or can put on a badge. It's something that we have to continue to manifest. So we could have a far out experience where we awakened to emptiness and suchness, and it was so amazing. And then we could just, if we didn't keep practicing, and if we, you know, took that on as like, look what I've attained, you know, it could just become an instrument for delusion and suffering. You could just go off and cause misery to yourself and others, even though you had this insight. You have to keep manifesting it.
I don't know.
Let's see. Did somebody have their hand up before? Oh, yeah, Mark. Do you want to, can you come up here? Sorry.
I guess so.
That way the cloud people can see and hear you.
I am no master of Buddhist thought and so forth, but it seems to me that enlightenment is described a lot as it's nothing special. It's as you were just saying. I think there's no special magical state that you're looking for. It's having a true deep awareness, felt awareness, and a lived awareness of being one with the present moment, of being completely connected with reality as it is, being aware of what's happening, and hopefully from that flows some of the good things that we do, like not harming others and so forth and so on. But I think I've always believed that it's sort of imaginary or overblown to think that there is some special enlightenment state. It just doesn't. It's something that you achieve. You get to the point where you are totally in the moment and totally connected to everything. But that you can't be totally that way and function sometimes in the day-to-day world. But you can be in that zone, perhaps. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I think, you know, to cut to the essence of it, because, you know, we could all do graduate degrees on all the different meanings of enlightenment and ways it's been interpreted and the evolution throughout time and how it's held in different sects and all that kind of stuff. So I find myself kind of wanting to explain. But to kind of get at the core of the issue, which is, if you are a Zen practitioner, what aspect of this should you care about? And, I mean, should. You don't have to do anything. But what I recommend that you care about is something very, very specific. And in both Soto Zen and Rinzai Zen, so Rinzai is where you work on koans formally, and there's more of a recognition of you have achieved this insight, you have achieved that insight, da da da. And like, I have a personal aversion to that system because it just brings out all the worst in me of like, you know, striving and comparing and all of that kind of stuff. But it has its place because those of us in Soto Zen can basically conclude there's just nothing to get. It's just, you know, it's just trying to be a good person. It's just moment by moment, just trying to be present and nice. It's saying, you know, being polite to the clerk in the grocery store, that kind of thing, right? Which it is, and yet. So we don't talk about it very much because we don't want to go on that kind of Rinzai assertive grasping kind of, not that all Rinzai people are like that, right? They have their own ways of dealing with it, but Soto Zen very much just telling you to just let go and be with things the way they are. But there is something that we call Kensho. And Kensho is seeing one's true nature. And this insight can happen suddenly. I know people for whom it has happened abruptly. And it's not actually all that pleasant for it to happen abruptly. I mean, I always, for many, many years, I really wanted it to happen abruptly to me. I wanted to be like, oh, fall off my zafu. And yet it's actually can be kind of traumatic also. But the insight itself, it can also happen gradually. It's the insight that matters. For some people, it kind of comes in a flash. For some people, it kind of happens much more gradually. Understanding your true nature, which is just, if you know someone before they understand their true nature, and then whether it's sudden or gradual, and even if it's sudden, they have to integrate it over time. And then you see somebody after many years of practice who has awakened to this. I mean, the transformation is very, very remarkable. You see someone at home in their own skin. You see someone it's much more joyful and at ease. It's like shedding a huge weight that you've been carrying around all your life. Seeing in what way, you don't exist. It's a wonderful way in which you don't exist. It's like all that crap that you've been carrying around, ideas about yourself, is just a story. And yet you're still here. You're free. So all of our teachings and our sesshin and stuff are moving us toward seeing this. But it's a very personal thing. It's not a like a transcendent thing. It's not a before you have this insight, you're struggling, and afterwards all your problems are solved. I mean, unfortunately not. I don't know if you've ever seen that book by Jack Kornfield, After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. I mean, life still has to be lived. But it's so, and it's not that insight is not the only insight. There's frankly, the Dharma is infinite. There is much more to awaken to. But particularly in Zen, we think of this awakening to your true nature as being like worth striving for, worth trying to do. But one of the ways that my teachers would talk about practice, and it's not a way that I talk about often because it can seem kind of dismissive, but you can approach practice more than two ways, but in this way of looking at it, you can approach it from the point of view of translation or transformation. If you're interested in translation, you want to know what Zen can do to make your life better. You want some mindfulness tools, you want community, you want, what can I take from Zen and apply to my life in order to relieve some suffering and to be a happier person and all of that, which is great. The other thing is transformation. So you can engage this practice with the longing, the spiritual longing, to be utterly transformed by it. That is possible. It's optional. And it's difficult to talk about those two things without making one sound better than the other. Like, you're just interested in translation. I'm going for transformation. Like, but we are where we are. I mean, it depends on where people are in their lives. And if you've got healing to do, you've just got to get your life together, then by all means, just use the translation and kind of write off the transformation part for now. Andrew, I've talked a lot since you raised your hand.
Do we
so
still have time to go further on this topic?
Oh yeah. I mean, we could spend the whole evening on this topic if we want. I mean,
comment, kind of a comment slash question. So
What I originally found so attractive about Soto Zen, in particular Dogen being the founder of Soto Zen, is that often when we're asking this question of enlightenment, we sometimes tend to forget that isn't this what Dogen spent a lot of time talking about? This idea, like, contrary to the idea that, I'd say, like, for example, like maybe in Tibetan Buddhism, for example, to where there's these steps that you take leading up to the final big moment, leading up to enlightenment. And Dogen said, no, practice and enlightenment are not two things. So if we're asking the question of what is enlightenment, isn't enlightenment the practice? I mean, according to Dogen?
Gold star for you.
Well, I mean, this is what keeps me on this path, though. This really is seriously what keeps me, and what I find so, for lack of better words, attractive about Soto Zen is that isn't enlightenment the dedication to the practice? I mean...
It is.
Yes and no.
It stumped her.
It is. But practice and life and yourself and your practice is not what you think.
Oh, this is so confusing.
That's a good answer. Good question.
Good answer.
but I mean, that is what puts my butt on the cushion every day, is this idea that the practice and enlightenment are not. I'm not practicing to get enlightenment. The enlightenment to me is the sitting in the upright posture. I mean, that's, I don't know if that's a great way of putting it, but I mean, do you see what I'm getting at?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, Yoli's like, what? I mean, this is why Dogen wrote just volumes about this whole
Shobo Genzo thing is answering this question.
In essence, I feel like we talk about enlightenment and awakening and all these things to just so we don't fall asleep, so we don't get complacent and assume that our current way of seeing the world is it. There's always just this little and. Because the seeing reality with a capital R is so different from our usual way of perceiving things. I said it's like you've been in a play all your life and you don't even realize you're an actor, and then one day somebody leaves the stage door open and you wander outside and you're like, what the? I mean, it's that different from the way that we usually think of things. And yet, we realize, like, this was the situation all along, right? So that's where that kind of, it doesn't change anything, really. it only breaks you free of your limited perception.
And what I'm hearing you say is that that also means that, so what that would mean in translation for me is that I also have to be very careful about my ideas of what my sitting is.
Yeah. Yeah. And all you have to do is read some Dogen to do that. And it is like, what is it? One of the things we recite on Tuesdays is Zazen is entering directly into the ocean of Buddha nature.
Right. That's why I love Dogen.
What's
so
that
much.
About?
So this idea of practice enlightenment has always been so intriguing to me. Thank you.
All right. Well, we got like 15 minutes. Should we tackle what was the other one?
Yeah, what was it?
Is it still okay to want things?
You can do that in 15 minutes, right? Well, can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
It's not a question of you. It's a question of everyone else.
Am I close enough to the mic here?
Yeah.
What's so funny?
You're facing just a random direction.
Well,
you have to see you, though.
Huh?
It's okay.
The chair was there
they
for a reason.
They can see most of me.
I've been up there, and I know what I'm looking at when I'm looking at somebody. So this is good. So my question is, I mean, there are many, many inspiring things that you say, Domio, but that last one about it's like you're in a play. Thank you. And then one day somebody leaves the stage, your door open, and you wander outside. And it's kind of like I was trying to say on Sunday that when you realize that you are not the protagonist, what I want to know of these, the folks here who don't care about enlightenment or don't know why they're sitting or sitting is boring or all of those things, what does that make you think of or feel like? That's what I want to know.
What does what?
What you just said and what I just said. I mean, I find that in and of itself almost enlightening. Like, let's do it. Let's have it. I'm all over this. I'll sit again tomorrow. There have been times when I have gotten up from sitting. And maybe it's been good or maybe it's been not so good. And what's in my head is, I gotta do that again. And I know that I'm a spiritual person. I love this stuff. And so I am curious about how people respond to that. I'm crazy. I'm simple. I don't have enough to do.
You mean the people who don't care about enlightenment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, no, whatever that
means. I think for me, it just seems like something unreachable and something that I don't understand, so I don't focus on that.
Did people hear what Yoli said?
And it feels like it's something that other people achieve.
And
that's
my
outside of my reach, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think about it that much either. No. Anymore. I mean, I was interested in the question, me really, can I be enlightened too? Mm-hmm. What does it matter when we can come here and have all these wonderful discussions? What did you just do?
I put the camera where they could see you.
Well, it just matters if they can hear me. But do you see what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, but I don't think there's anybody really here who, like, doesn't care about enlightenment or thinks Zazen's boring or pointless. I mean, why would they still be here?
Right.
Well,
I mean, I can tell you a lot about that, I think.
go ahead.
I think for me in particular, I think I am still really uncomfortable taking things on faith and believing things, just kind of to believe them. And I think that this notion of enlightenment almost like packages all of that up into one thing. That's like, there's this thing, trust me, there's something outside the stage door. Trust me, there's something here. And I'm just not comfortable. I guess with that being one of the reasons that I sit, because I'll tell you, I mean, I've sat for years, I sit every day, and I really couldn't really tell you why. I wish I got up from sitting and thought I would want to do that again. And it's so it's such a strange thing because there are so many concrete things in my life that are better now because of practice. And there's so many things that I do that I could almost like point to and say, like, look, this is me being more of the person that I want to be. But I think something about the packaging of enlightenment makes it more about, I have to have faith that there's something out there that other people get that I don't. And I'm still uncomfortable with that notion of believing because people tell me it's there.
I just want to say one thing, then I'll sit down, I promise. I am learning to have faith that there's something in here. And I never, never thought that way before I came here. And this is where I wouldn't mind it if you called me simple-minded or idealistic or whatever. But if Domio says it, and if Dogen says it, and if Kyogen says it, her teacher, if Norman Fisher says it, and the Buddha says it, I'm going with them. Right or wrong, I'm going with them. That's just the way I get it.
Thank you. Eric.
Sorry, I thought, didn't realize that I had mute on. I actually loved this whole conversation, but I loved what Eric said, because, and I loved that I forget the lady's name that just spoke, but the last thing she said about filling it in here. And I think I can tie to, for me, it makes sense to tie those together based on something you said, Domio, where you said sitting and enlightenment is not what we think it is. And I don't know if you were being tongue-in-cheek when you said that, but to me, the cessation, maybe not cessation, the suspension of thought. And I think when you did a podcast episode where you're talking about the practice of being the Tenzin and being the chef at Sesshin, and that is honestly where I think things started clicking. And that's what brought it in here to me rather than up here. And so to me, I think that is the connection between the practice and the enlightenment and the faith and the feeling is the doing, not the thinking. So I just wanted to like tie that in because it was really, really impactful when you said it. And then everything else in the conversation has been, to me, just feeding into that.
Thank you. And I mean, this kind of raises the question of, like, I don't know, if you want the kind of awakening insight that I'm talking about, what does your practice look like? If you don't relate to it, you don't see it as relevant to you, or it seems kind of out of your grasp, or I don't know, like, then what does your practice look like, right? I don't know. I think it's valuable to have a question. To me, it feels like if you practice without a kind of a sense of mystery beyond, I don't know, it could be like any self-help program. I don't know, fine, I guess. But I feel like there's a process of growth that happens inside us as we practice, whether we're really conscious of it or not. Just if we put in the time and we put in the study and the years and the sangha and all of this, something grows and changes in us. And I think part of that is that a little bit of that sense of like mystery and beyond and challenge, even if you don't really see yourself as being somebody who, and yet so much of Zen and so many of the writings of Dogen are like, it is not beyond you,
It is not. It is like right here. It's right here for the taking. like, don't miss it. So in some ways, it's like encouraging you to please care about enlightenment, even though I almost never use that term on the podcast, if you have noticed, unless I'm using it in plural for enlightenments, like insights, like liberating insights we have all along the way.
What you just said is why I brought up Dogen when I got in the chair. What you just said just then, it's right here, don't miss it, which is in the sitting. It can be, that's also why we do work practice. It's in whatever you're doing, mm-hmm. right? It's like meditation and daily life are not two things.
Yoli, you were going to say something.
Yes. So when I was trying to figure out what kind of Buddhism to practice, I remember watching, I don't remember, on PBS or something, a show about, and I think there were monks at a monastery, and all they did all day was meditate, and some dude comes over with a stick and wakes them up, right, so that they don't fall asleep. And the only thing I got from that was, like, all they do is sit around and hoping they'll get enlightened by meditating all of these hours. And I thought, what's the point? You're not talking to each other. You're not, like, having any relationships outside of this monastery. You spend all these hours meditating with the hope. Because that's one of the themes, things that they were talking about, is that they are trying so hard to become enlightened. And I thought, oh, that's just not what I would want to do, right? That's like, you're not talking to anybody else except just sitting on a pillow, just hoping that you will, and for what? What would be the point?
But you don't know that that's what they're doing.
Well, that's what they said they were doing on the show, which is what got me all like, ew, I don't want to do that.
I mean, every person has their own relationship to practice, and that's one of the things that I think our lineage does really well, is respect that, is respect people's own, their own journey, their own, like, what do you feel drawn to? What do you feel is helpful for you right now? What do you want to explore? And like, it's all good. It's not, you know, you have to do it this way or you're not doing the program. It's just, some of us just get the bug. And like, this is probably gonna make you think I'm just crazy, but at one point, when I was a junior monk, so that means like I've given everything up. I own nothing. I got rid of my car and my tent and all my belongings, and I'm just living in this Zen center. You know, it's 24/7 Zen. Not a monastery. We didn't meditate that much. Frankly, I'd much rather have been in a monastery. Meditate is much more fun than like just doing office work all day, but you know, it was still intense and lots of Dharma study and all that, and I went to retreats whenever I could, and I just wanted it so much, and then it would just seem like Dogen and whatever, and faith in mind, and the things we read were just like dangling this, like, it's right here, it's right in front of you. You know, just reach out and take it. It's right before your eyes, this liberation. And it was just like, ah. I mean, the thought occurred to me that if I could attain it by cutting off my finger, if I knew that I could just go out and go like this, and then I'd have it, that I would do it. I just didn't believe. Nobody would be able to convince me that was actually the case, right? That's not how it works. But that's like, I would make that sacrifice in order to have this this insight. You know, it's many, many more years of work. But I began to think, you know, there was a little part of me that thought, oh, look at me, I'm in a Zen monastery. And then after a few years, I thought,
I think there's something wrong with me. I think all the folks out there that don't have to go to a Zen monastery, don't have to get rid of all their stuff in order to do this practice, maybe they have something I don't. And so there's just no accounting for what people have to do. And that's one of the reasons that I hope you're really, really, I hope Great Vow Zen Monastery lasts. It's only been around for 20 years. It hasn't moved on to its second leadership yet. I mean, there's a lot of Zen centers and monasteries in the West right now who are in this position. They may or may not be here 10, 20, 30 years from now. They began, and are they going to be able to be sustained and passed on? And to me, the presence of monasteries is like, I just think of somebody in the future who has that bug, like I did, who is just like, I don't care about my freaking job. I don't care about my car. I don't care about any of this. I don't care about any of this life. I want to go and just, this is the only thing that I want to concentrate on, is this great matter. So, and I think it's, you know, to be able to do that is a wonderful opportunity that not all people are interested in. Oh my goodness, there we are at 9 o'clock. Oh, this is great.
We did one question.
But it was kind of fun. It was fun to do that whole voting to see where the interest was. So I will keep in mind where some of that other interest was as well for future Dharma talks or something. All right. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.
Good night.
Thank you.